What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Broadcasting from the WEEI studios, powered by Verizon. 93.7 WEEI-FM and HD1, Lawrence, Boston. An Odyssey Sports Station.
WEEI Afternoons, Christian Arkin, Andy Hart. And joining us on the phone right now is Brian Scalabrine of NBC Sports Boston. Scal, how are we doing today, bud?
I'm doing good, man. That was like a throwback from when I was in high school, man. Yeah. I appreciate the... That's such a good song.
I remember...
How come music isn't like that anymore?
I remember showing up at a middle school dance with me and all my corny, you know, seventh grade white friends. And that song came on, and it was like a riot broke out in the gymnasium that day.
I mean,
it was one of those type of songs. Anyway, Scal.
Oh,
it's a great song. What's that guy's name? Pastor Troy? Is that his name?
You're asking me.
I want to say.
Is that it?
Yeah. Oh, Little Troy, or whatever it is. Anyway, Scal, brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, by the way, perfecting the art of fresh, by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when the drains don't flow, and by findmassmoney.gov. Scal, Friday night, I was in the building. And I watched the Celtics get pile driven by Domantas Sabonis. They follow that up with just barely winning that game on Sunday. They got Toronto here now. Celtics are scuffling a little bit. What do you attribute that to?
I don't know. I mean, so if you just take the analytic approach for 1 second, their defense in the fourth quarter has been atrocious, really, especially in those losses, right? Like, I'm talking like defensive ratings of 165. Defensive ratings of 137. And the only thing that has me so concerned with that is, okay, so if we're all convinced that you can flip the switch, which I guess I am because they have the most talent, even though what's been odd is with us whole, we haven't been good when everyone has been healthy. But let's use the, like, we'll say that they can flip a switch. Well, if you could flip the switch, shouldn't you be able to flip that switch in the fourth quarter and win games for us? So I guess I'm not, like, super panicking because – ultimately, 7-game series, talent wins out, you know, like that whole thing. But it is a little bit strange that when we want to try to ratchet it up and get stops, we don't. And a lot of it has to do, I think, with the start of the fourth quarter. Like, we have to have, I think, a more sense of urgency. But the numbers would play out everywhere else. It's relatively fine, almost normal, good first quarter starts. But, man, our fourth quarter defensive rating has been really bad in those losses.
We all know that Joe Mazzulla has a different perspective on a lot of things. He looks at things uniquely. Do you think he's enjoying this or appreciative of this journey that his defending champion team is on that isn't easy and is getting some criticisms lobbed their way?
Yeah, I don't know how anybody can enjoy, like, your team not playing up to par. I really don't. Like, I think – coaches are like, they live and die by every possession, you know, and, you know, he's always like, hey, man, it's all a process. We got to keep getting better. But clearly we can see they're not really getting better. They're just kind of like going through the season. You want to say it's the dog days of the NBA that we can use that. But, you know, from the beginning of the season, I hope that bullseye is on our forehead, right? To now, it's like, it's a legit bullseye. Like, I watch all kinds of games and, so I'm going to watch a team, and then the next night or two nights later, I'll go watch that same team. And the level of effort is significantly less, and they'll be down by 20 to Charlotte or something like that. So I'm seeing it. You know, I'm seeing teams coming after us. But the thing is, I'm also seeing teams not afraid of us. Where I thought last year, you know, with those 50-point drubbings, 30-point drubbings, up by 25 in the first quarter, and you're just like, you know, like, oh my God, I can't believe this team is this good. We're not seeing that as much anymore. I think this new wave of players or this group out there is like really excited about taking on the Celtics. And a lot of people I've heard like announcers talking about like our environment, which is incredible. The Garden has been awesome this year. And I think it's having like an adverse effect on the opponent. We're expecting them to be intimidated, but they're just so excited that they're in an arena that has this much buzz.
We're talking with Brian Scalabrine, NBC Sports Boston. Scal, the Celtics' three-point shooting and team percentage dropped recently down to about 36%. I think that's middle of the pack in the league. They're number one, obviously, in attempts, so that's one thing that's been steady this year. Certain individuals, though, have not been shooting the ball quite as well this year, and it's starting to look like it wasn't just, you know, an early season fluke. It's starting to look like maybe that's just the way it's going to go this year. What do you make of that? Guys like Hauser and some of these other guys whose percentages are dropping off, and how is that going to play into the way this team runs their offense going forward?
Sure. You know what? I think this is like the main reason, and I'm not going to blame Porzingis for this one. I'm really not. But Porzingis, can we both agree he's a versatile big?
Sure.
Inside, pick and roll, lob. When have we seen him roll to the basket for an alley-oop? Not in transition, but in the half court. We did it in the Oklahoma City first half, where we were just like rocking and rolling, right? And so, and I know his points per possession are 1.1. Last year, it was like 1.3 plus. So when you post up Porzingis, his efficiency is a little bit down. But the way I would like to see us play, right? And this is all I can give you because I'm not at practice every day, nor am I like scouring over the films the way that they do, right? I just watch it like you guys and maybe go back and watch something like what happened during that fourth quarter, because I might be into the game, but not actually just be able to sit back and watch it, right? I think that we're just like force feeding Porzingis way too much. I liked what we did against New Orleans. Like we kind of moved him around. We put him on at the three, but it doesn't have to be everything ends in Porzingis when he's out there. Like I get it. Like at the beginning of the time when he came back, like let's get him going, you know, like go ahead, force feed the big fella. Let's get him going. But I think we're better. And I think he's better by like kind of mixing everything up. Let's go pick and pop. Let's go drive, kick, drive, kick, drive, kick. Let's go pick and roll, side pick and roll to a roll. And then, hey, you know what? Just to really demoralize you, we're going to post a big fella up once in a while. And I, you know, no different than the way that the Spurs used Tim Duncan. Tim Duncan would score like 15 points a game, and they'd be massive 15 points because all of a sudden Popovich is like, you know what? We need to throw the ball into the big fella. Let's do that. But outside of that, like he would go dribble handoff on the perimeter. He would do things short roll, kick it weak side. Be a versatile big, and I just feel like, and maybe I'm the only one that feels this way, but, man, we are just force-feeding Porzingis every time he has a matchup, which kind of is taking everyone's rhythm away. You know, let's move the ball. Let's be one of that team that when every time they talk about three-point shooting, we go like, well, hey, man, we just move the ball and get the best shot. Well, we're not actually moving the ball and getting the best shot. We're throwing the ball into Porzingis. He might get a late double, and then we're just kicking it out to what you call like a semi-grenade where a guy's just casting up a three. We're better than that. We're just a better team than that. We don't need to just play that style, especially with our two best players, our versatile wings that can, you know, handle and run pick and roll. And that was the whole point last year of getting those guys to move the ball. So if you're asking me, and the numbers would show, like Porzingis' net rating has not been good since returning, I think we need to go back to just kind of like a more free-flowing offense with a sprinkled in a little bit of post-up.
So obviously we are disappointed in what the Celtics are. I mean, I was dreaming of undefeated at home type season, and they got seven losses at home. So, you know, they haven't played as well as we've expected, but also part of that is in comparison to two teams that look like they might be having special seasons in Cleveland and OKC. At this point in the year, do we just have to accept that those two teams are really, really freaking good? Like, are you accepting that's who those two teams are, what their record says they are?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, like they have issues. It's like size, right? Like size for the Cavs. You know, they have to get through, if Mitchell Robinson comes back, they have to get through like getting beasted. Like those two slim forwards, who are awesome, by the way. Like Mobley's awesome. He's a future star, and he'll probably be an all-star this year. And Jared Allen is so underrated, right? So, you know, size-wise, they're just a little bit small, like per position. And then with Oklahoma City, you know, like, well, there's no doubt, amazing, like an amazing team. Look what they did to us defensively. But we also were up by 15 in that game, right? So they also scored 87 in the NBA Cup. So they are having great seasons. But they have showed us like signs of, oh, they're not perfect teams. You know, it's not like they're the 73-9 Warriors who lost, or with Kevin Durant, like when they had KD, like there are, or even us last year, like they're good teams, unreal teams. But I think that I think going into it, the playoffs start, I think the Celtics will still be the favorites on all the gambling websites. And I think that's kind of how I look at it.
Scal, along those same lines, right now there are only three teams in the East that are more than five games over 500. I think it's four in the West. The cream sort of rose to the top pretty quickly, I'd say, this year and has kind of stayed there. Who are some teams that you think could make a push in the second half that haven't really made that much noise so far this year?
Yeah, so not fair to the Bucks, who are better. They're just like they're a better team now after that atrocious start. Not fair to the Magic, who have their two best players out, who really did a good job of treading water with Banchero and Franz Wagner out. So not fair to those guys. Not fair to the Knicks, because we won't know who the Knicks are until they get Mitchell Robinson back. Now, I don't know if Mitchell Robinson will be healthy, but Karl-Anthony Towns is a bona fide five man that could play some four, but they need like 18, 22 minutes a game out of Mitchell Robinson. So I think like you have to put those teams into that category as well. Everybody else like Indiana, I'm not sure about. Like they could make a run. They're solid. But I would think the teams that you can sort of fear and say like these teams, like especially since we don't look, invincible, like all those teams, if everything is going right for them, like they could definitely catch you.
Okay, we'll leave it right there then. Brian Scalabrine, thanks so much for the time today. We'll be looking forward to the call tonight against the Raptors. And Andy Hart will be talking to you next week. I don't know if you heard. Station Shakeup.
Yeah.
I'm going to be moving the nights. You're going to be talking to Andy Hart, Ted Johnson, and Fitzy from here on out. But it's been a pleasure, Scal, last 3 years talking to you.
Who was the other guy?
Ted Johnson, you remember him?
Yeah, I know Ted Johnson. You said 50?
No, not 50. 50 Cent
yeah, 50.
Is going to be joining
yep,
the show. 50. Fitzy, Nick Fitzy Stevens. Not 50 Cent, unfortunately.
I would take that.
All right. Yeah, if you ever want to come up and chop it up, if you ever come to a game, man, I would love to. Because I think I would love to talk to you more about basketball off air.
Absolutely. That'd be great. And okay. Thanks so much for doing these. We had a great time talking with you, and you'll keep it going with these guys going forward.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
All right. That's Brian Scalabrine, NBC Sports Boston. Him and Drew Carter would be on the call tonight for the Celtics and the Toronto Raptors.
You guys got some sort of relationship going on that
damn,
I didn't know
Andy.
About?
Sounds like it. Sounds like it.
You going to go make out with him or something?
Well, I have to get a ladder, but yeah. it would be a whole thing.
Look at he was like, I'd like to talk off air.
Off air.
Yeah. Ken's a basketball guy.
I mean, I'm a hoop head. He did hoop say head. That. It was because, I forget why, it was in the old show, and we were talking about certain players, and I said something about Jalen Brunson, and Scal's like, who said Brunson? Whoever said that is a real hoop head. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Head. Right
yeah,
here.
I
that's
got lucky.
Me. I didn't. It may have been like an insult. Look at this hoop head over here. Yeah, that was, we're just,
Wow.
Just
look
sharing,
at you.
Sharing a brain. What do you want?
And he doesn't even know the Patino story.
That's true.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I have to tell him
I'm
about
sure
that.
I'm not sure Arcan knows the Patino story but the way he had that
not.
Blank
Sorry.
Stare.
Well,
you mean that one
like,
I made up? Yeah.
When you say Patino story, I think of the father immediately, not the son,
your
who
Patino.
I came over to trap on a half-court trap and stole the ball from.
Yeah.
And then took it back the other way for a layup. And my coach would call in and tell you that's a true story, by the way. He texted me the other day. Anyway, 617-779.
You're still living off it.
793-7 was the pinnacle of my athletic career, Andy. So, yes, I still am. By the way, that's a brave card for you to play, walking down the hallway with your old helmet on and your old starter
awesome.
Jacket. Come on.
Yeah.
617-779-7937. Here's Dan Ball with what's trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All right, here's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. Brought to you by Timeout Market Boston. The Celtics hit the road tonight to play the Toronto Raptors. Tip-off is at 7:30. Boston is 28-11 on the season, while Toronto is 9-31. WEEI's Justin Turpin confirms that the Celtics currently have a clean injury report for tonight's game. In NFL coaching news, the Bears are conducting their in-person interview with Mike McCarthy this afternoon, their second known candidate to interview in person after Ron Rivera did so on Sunday. The Jets have completed an interview with Broncos defensive coordinator Vance Joseph for their head coach position, and former Jets head coach Robert Saleh has head coach interviews with the Jaguars, the Raiders, and now the Dallas Cowboys. Also, longtime NFL special teams coach Mike Prefer is expected to finalize a deal to become the new special teams coach at North Carolina. He's worked in the NFL since 2002 and has been a head special teams coach from 2006 through 2022. The NFL playoffs continue this coming weekend, and WEEI's coverage of the football postseason is brought brought to you by Wise Snacks. No one does crunchy, salty, or cheesy better than Wise Snacks. In hockey news, the Bruins were back in the win column last night as they beat the Tampa Bay Lightning at TD Garden 6-2. David Pastrnak and Pavel Zacha each had a goal and two assists, while Jeremy Swayman made a season-high 43 saves in the victory. Boston is off until Saturday afternoon when they visit the Ottawa Senators. And finally, the Red Sox have acquired 27-year-old catcher Blake Sable from the San Francisco Giants for international bonus pool money. Chase Shugart was DFA'd to create roster space for Sable. He hit .313 in 11 games with San Fran last season. He's played 121 regular season games in the MLB overall. Experience the essence of Boston's culinary and cultural scene at Time Out Market Boston, nestled in the Fenway. From live music sessions to food and beverage tastings and everything in between, Time Out Market Boston showcases the best of the city under one roof. I'm Dan Ball. This is Trending Now on WEEI and WEEI.com. More Afternoons with Arcan and Hart coming up right after this.
Get Boston Sports Original on the go.
Wherever you go.
Just download the Odyssey app.
We're right back to it. Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
What? What? But if he asks for $500,000 more, that's it. Forget it. He's our best player. We want him forever. But that $500,000 is just a bridge too far. Instead of just paying him the $500,000, how about instead of that? Let's bring him in with ourselves and another guy, and let's tell him all the reasons why he doesn't deserve $500,000 more dollars than the $3.5 million that we're paying him for this very, very good output and everything else that's been going on here.
That was an asinine thing to say.
What a ridiculous comment. I mean, this guy, it's unbelievable with him. He's unbelievable. Kennedy, I know it's the team. Like, when the team's good, it doesn't matter what the president says, but when you're not, and when you're sabotaging yourself like this, and you send poor Kennedy out there to try and dress it up and put lipstick on it, like, what's he supposed to say, I guess? Like, well, you know, it's we really care about him. We want him. Well, what can he say?
Don't say he's one of the best players in baseball, but we can't give him $500,000.
What are they? Is he supposed to say, well, we're not sure he's that good, so we're going to fight him on this?
So he thinks arbitration is a necessary evil. You know what's an unnecessary evil in Red Sox Nation right now? Cheapness.
Yes.
And I'm sorry to steal your shtick, but it just, by osmosis, has seeped into my pores. Everything that's a problem comes back to one thing, being cheap.
Cheapness.
Like, and this is $500,000. Mm. I would understand millions, whatever, budgets, waste, because I'm fearful of them signing contracts that they'll kind of then throw back in our faces right, for why they can't do other stuff. But $500,000 will never be thrown back in my face.
Yeah, this isn't Juan Soto. You have to go up to $750
it's
million.
It's not even like $20 million for Giolito or $30 million for Bregman or whatever. It's $500,000. Some, you know, Fitzy will insert some clear. They could find that in their sofa cushions or something.
That was
like
a good impression
Henry.
Of Fitzy, I think, yeah.
Screw Fitzy. but, like, it's just, why is he saying that? Like, and I did actually enjoy, though, both of them at some point over the weekend said, I don't know, you could ask Perez about that.
Yeah.
It reminded me of Belichick, like, ask Brady why his balls are deflated. I got a lot on my plate. Balls, not one of them.
Can I just say for Kennedy to... Pause. For Kennedy to be saying, I understand Cora saying that because it's Breslow's a level above Cora when it comes to these things. Kennedy's a level above Breslow. So anything that Breslow's being told about how to spend the money and who to allocate it to, just by the way, Jaren Duran's not the only guy that was coming up on arbitration. There were three other players, I should say. Tanner Houck, Garrett Crochet, and Cutter Crawford. All three of those guys, all pitchers, by the way, but still, all three of those guys were arbitration eligible. And the only one that they had a problem with was the best one. Well, maybe Crochet's better, but like the best one, which is Jaren Duran. They reached deals with Tanner Houck, $3.95 million. That's basically what Duran's asking for. $3.8 million with Garrett Crochet, which is funny, by the way. Crochet's making less than Tanner Houck? Okay.
Isn't that also $1 million more than we were told? Weren't we floated the figure of $2.8 million the whole time?
For Crochet?
Yeah.
I don't remember that. Maybe we were. I don't remember.
You know that why that strikes a nerve with me?
No.
Oh, you had to overpay Crochet by $1 million, so now you got to make that money up somewhere, so we'll screw Jaren Duran out of $500,000. Oh, well, only got $500,000 more to find.
No.
I think they actually look at things on that granular of a level.
Okay.
Which I don't care for.
Tanner Houck, Cutter Crawford, $2.75 million. I'd take that $500,000 away from Cutter Crawford, I hate to say it.
Sure.
And give it to Jaren Duran. Cutter Crawford's a perfectly good pitcher, but Jaren Duran is a superstar right now, and they're not doing it, so... They reached deals with three of their four guys. They did not reach a deal with Jaren Duran. Jen McCaffrey over at The Athletic wrote this. She said the 28-year-old outfielder is coming off a breakout season, and he lists all the stats. The agents filed at $4 million, while the Red Sox filed at $3.5 million. a seemingly inconsequential difference in terms of baseball money. Well said there, Jen. The sides will likely go to a trial sometime in February where Duran will be present as the team argues he should make less money.
Well, not the whole team. Don't let Kennedy in there.
No.
Because if Kennedy gets in there, Duran will be like, he just called me the best player, one of the best players in baseball.
Best guy in the league. Best guy on the team. Definitely deserves this $500. I mean, no, we shouldn't pay him, actually.
Line.
Duran was not scheduled to attend Fenway Fest because of a previous commitment.
Mm-hmm. Wink, wink.
But Cora didn't hide his displeasure with the process, calling it kind of a bad process. It doesn't make sense, he said. Duran has been vocal about his confidence and self-esteem issues in the past, and coming off a career season, the team suggested he is not worthy of the salary he asked for could be risky. It's possible the club viewed his homophobic slur directed at a fan last summer as part of the reasoning, but they have not made that known. Asked if it was a good idea for the team to quarrel with Duran over a small sum, Cora said, "That's not my area. You gotta ask Craig. But I think we'll be okay. We'll be okay. I actually texted with Jaron yesterday. He's doing well. We'll see what happens in the upcoming weeks." Yikes. And, I mean, really yikes. Like, Cora sounds like he's not happy about that. I didn't hear him say that.
He lost the right to not be happy. He signed the $21 million deal. He didn't get the assurances that I thought he got at the time. Now he's telling everybody it was just
business. Or he got assurances and they went back on him. I mean, that could have happened too, Andy.
Oh, I guess. Then he needs to be more upset than just, you know, jerking Duran around and whatever else they're doing. This is a much bigger problem.
Sure.
I also have an issue with the homophobic slur thing. If you had a problem with that, then move on from him.
Mm.
If you actually have a... Don't shave $500,000 off
right.
His arbitration.
Is that what it costs to do that? Like, if you call a fan a terrible word, it only costs you $500,000?
Like,
that's
if
like
he,
the price?
If he crossed a line that organizationally you can't accept,
right,
then move on from him.
Right.
But don't belittle him in baseball terms, in terms of tiny money. Like,
yeah, we'll show him.
That makes
$500,000,
no sense. I think this is very simple. They don't want him. Long term, they don't want him. Like, I don't know how you can. If you want him long term, you don't do this.
No.
There's no way you go down this road.
Definitely not.
Burns, others, like this.
You
Burns, bridges.
You extend somebody
this,
like yeah, this if you want him. Yeah.
But you at least don't piss him off. You don't give him reason to want out, reason to hold you over a barrel, reason to make your life or negotiations tougher down the road.
Right.
Like, this is bad business. This is setting a precedent, and the only reason you could do that or would do that is you really don't care. This is a short-term relationship. I don't care.
Mookie Betts was 27 when they traded him, right? Or 26? I forget. It was either 26 or 27. It was around that age. It was around that time in his life. Jaron Duran's 27. And I know that Mookie Betts was an MVP prior to that and the five-time All-Star and, you know, Gold Glover and all the age of 22, 23. So it's not like they had the same career here or anything. I'm not saying that. But they're both guys who were very productive players at the age of 27, considered one of the top outfielders in the league. Duran was last year. Mookie was better than that, obviously. But just for the sake of this argument here, work with me. You're going to be turning your back on another guy like that? Not exactly like that, but kind of like that. Like, that's... How many times are you going to do that? How many times is this team going to look at a super talented outfielder and say, yeah, you know what? We're fine. We're okay. We're going to move on. We're going to quibble with you. We're going to lowball you. We're going to make offers that are insulting. And if it doesn't work out, we're going to ship your ass out of town. When has that ever worked for them?
It hasn't. And I think there's something to what you're saying. In an offseason where Soto got crazy money.
Yeah.
But also, Kyle Tucker was traded, I think, in part because teams are seeing the rising cost of these outfielder contracts. Mm-hmm. And maybe the Red Sox see that, then they see Soto and they go, oh, this Duran contract's going to go in a direction there's no way we're going to. And I don't necessarily fault them. I don't know that I'd be looking to give $400 or $500 million to Jaron Duran. Like, I don't see him that. He's their best player.
Sure.
He's a very good player.
Well, that's why you have arbitrate. You do. I mean, you get him at $4 million or whatever, and then you make the decision the next year, and then you
right.
go on like that. You have these arbitrations and these seasons where they're eligible for these things, and you don't have to pay them that much. So you take advantage of that. You don't piss them off. Like, that doesn't
yeah,
make
I
any
don't,
sense.
Unless, I mean, my cynical view, I told you, hardo football mentality, like some weird motivational tactic that if he's pissed off, he's going to play better.
Great.
I think it's all terrible, though. I think there's one certainty here. I don't have the answer to any of this. This is bad for their relationship, short and long term.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you don't want him long term, you've alienated one of your best players.
Yeah.
We talk about leaders. I feel like he kind of evolved into a leader in a weird way. homophobic slur aside.
Right.
He's the first guy that Cora talks about when it comes to locker room leadership. So, I know, like, Rob Refsnyder is the second, but it's the first name out of Cora's mouth.
And this team struggles with its hierarchy because the $300 million player does not want to be a leader.
Right.
He wants no part in that.
Right. Also scratched from Fenway Fest or whatever the hell it was called.
Yeah, like, you've now alienated a leader, your best player, a plate-setter energy guy that sets the tone for an offense that Cora is already complaining is not as consistent at times as he'd like it to be, and not as good on paper. We've talked about it. Tyler O'Neill, gone. Mm-hmm. You're not as good offensively on paper right now. You need to figure out a way to be better, and oh, by the way, you may have alienated or pissed off or whatever, muddied the water in your relationship with Jaren Duran. Like, is this a sneaky train wreck offseason?
Kind of.
They got Garrett Crochet.
Garrett Crochet is a good pickup,
awesome.
So I'm not going to say it's a total bleep up, but it's not good. I mean, you know, unless you love Aroldis Chapman, it's not really good. Or Walker Buehler.
I don't.
You know, like, I like Buehler. I like him more than Chapman, but Buehler. Buehler. But yeah, this hasn't been what I was expecting.
And
I'll
feel like with the thing they did yesterday, and I feel like we're back where we started, where we weren't putting everything on the young guys, and now it feels like we're starting to put everything on the young guys.
Yeah, it does seem that way. By the way, they are, well, let's take a call first, actually. 617-779-7937 is the phone number.
You pulled a Tucker and interrupted yourself.
I think this call is going to be about what I want to say, so I'm going to let him tee me up here. Sal and Lynn, go ahead. Nope, Sal and Lynn hung up. Well, he wanted to say that,
didn't
the
go well.
I know, he got a stage fright.
He's like, oh, I don't want to share my point with him.
Yeah, I'm not going to set this guy.
You're going to say it, just say it. What am I going
to
do?
He said that $500,000 could be used to spread out to other players. The Red Sox right now, according to McCaffrey says they're at $211 million. The CBT tax, well, I guess just the CBT, because the T stands for tax, the CBT is $237 million. You're still $26 million under it. Yeah. And they can't give $500,000 to Jaren Duran. That doesn't, I'm sorry, it's not a good excuse. I was going to yell at Sal, so maybe that's why he hung up, if that was going to be his take.
They want to be 26.5 under the CBT, maybe. They have this number in mind.
Why do you want to be under the CBT? Like,
I don't.
Spend up to it if you don't want to go over it.
Now I know how Sal feels. I want to hang up because he's yelling at me.
You got to be $26 million freaking dot. Like, now, you know, they sign Bregman or something, then we'll have a different conversation.
He's then not they might the be over it.
Main guy who I wanted, but yeah, they might be. I mean, that might be where it ends up going, but I don't think they're going to sign anybody that's going to put them over it if they're not willing to give Jaren Duran $500,000.
So I have a weird fascination with closers. I don't know why. I really like closers.
Closers are cool. That's
okay. Who's their closer?
Their closer right now, Garrett Whitlock, maybe?
Hendricks? Chapman? Any of them? I have this theory.
Out of those three, I'd pick Whitlock, I mean, if you ask me. But
I have this theory that
be.
Teams that say their closer's name with a question mark stink. It's just a very simple Andy Hart theory of baseball. And that, like, there's been no talk of that. We talk about right-handed bats. We talk about Bregman. They accomplished nothing there, in my opinion. Now, I know Cora has talked about the pitching depth is much better.
Yeah.
He believes the pitching depth is much better. But I don't know that I feel that it's great. They're already talking about six-man rotation. He was already acknowledging six-man rotation because, did you know their schedule? This may affect you in your future endeavors. Right out the gates, they play a ton of games, but then they get every Thursday off in June and July. Like, they have a set day off every single week.
Yeah, that's not super unusual, I don't think. There's a lot of Thursdays off. I don't know if it's every single week, but yeah.
He made it sound like it was very unusual and that he didn't really care for it.
Oh. I guess every single Thursday is a lot, but Thursday is usually the off day.
Well, yeah, the getaway like day or whatever, off day. But what was my point?
They're playing a lot of games, six-man rotation.
Oh, yeah, six-man rotation. Okay. Even he actually acknowledged that. Now, I don't. Way too early for that. We're going to get to the freaking, can we get to, I don't know, close to the start of the season before we anoint any of these pitchers? Like, I mean, is Giolito in that mix? I don't know.
I would imagine.
Maybe we'll see.
Guy had plenty of time to rehab, we'll say that.
Talk about teeing it up, just like Sal. He'll tee it up for opposing hitters.
Sal and Lynn, let's try this again. What do you got, Sal?
Hey, here we go. Sorry, I was in a bad area. So I think we should take this money, that $500,000. Duran's a great player for the Red Sox. When you look at him in the long run, in the league, I wouldn't say he's one of the best. I say we take this money, allocate it elsewhere, maybe in the minors. We don't have the best farm system in the league. I think we take that, we get some of these
young
guys.
They do have the best farm system in the league, though, so.
I would debate that, though. I mean, we lost one of our best corner infielders this year. I don't know where he's from. We took him a few years ago. That's a big hit. We're not the best team in baseball. I think that with this $500,000, we could get a few of those overseas kids from the Dominican Republic,
Yeah, I don't want to do that, Sal. Sorry. I don't care. I don't care for that. You can
is
take
this a mom-and-pop operation?
Seriously, what? You got to take that money and build up your farm system? Right. Like, that's what we're doing now? How about work on the team that you have here? The farm system's fine. The farm system's overstocked. And maybe it's not number one in the league anymore, but it's probably still top three. Even with Anthony and Campbell and these other guys getting called up, it's still a very, very strong farm system. Okay? There's still a lot of tradable prospects and guys that you can bring in. You can do the international draft and bring guys in without having to spend any of the money that you're looking to give to Jaren Duran.
And they haven't given out massive contracts to anybody for a long time.
No.
And I heard, well, it's because they have a new model and they draft and develop and do all these things. Now he's saying they don't have enough for international player. Like, where are they spending the money? Where is the money going?
You're telling me $500,000 would be better spent stocking up the minor league, which, by the way, it's not like you're going to get, you know, like that. That's a small amount.
Right.
You got all these teams. You got the single A, double A, triple A. Like it's a lot
nothing.
Of play.
Nothing.
It's nothing.
It's a drop in the bucket.
You think that's a better use of that money than paying Jaren Duran? Even if you don't think he's the best outfielder in the league, he's a $4 million player who should be making like $20 million.
And if we're targeting international players or overseas players, as he put it, why are we not in the top 10 in Sasaki?
Good question. Great question.
Where is the money going?
I don't know.
I feel like there needs to be an organizational audit over there. Like, literally, where is it? It's one of these schools. Remember when Brockton was missing like $15 million
yes.
in their school system?
Yeah, because Wiggy stole it.
Yes,
yeah.
Wiggy took it all.
Allegedly.
Head coach, one and done. I feel like there needs to be an... Where does the money go that they're
know.
So tight that they got to... And I'm not even the biggest Jaren Duran fan. Like, he became a really likable player because of his energy and his ability and all mm-hmm. that. He's had his ups and downs with
sure.
the fans and everything.
And some plays where he just let the ball bounce to the wall and stuff.
But you're screwing him. You're legit screwing one of your best players.
Yeah.
And we're you even have callers making up weird excuses for it. Like, what world are we living in? They're being cheap.
Yeah.
Every answer this offseason has been cheap. Why'd they get Garrett Crochet?
Because it was a trade.
Cheap.
Yeah.
Why'd they not get Soto?
Because they couldn't afford it. Yeah.
Cheap.
Cheap.
Why did they get Buehler instead of, like, Burns or somebody else?
Because he was cheaper.
Cheap.
Mm-hmm.
It's always cheap. Cheap, cheap, cheap.
Sound like a parakeet. 617.
Just telling you what I
779.
You made me.
7937 is the phone number. Don't blame me for your parakeet.
I learned it from watching you. All right, Arcan?
Yeah, sure. The Boston Bruins. Looks like they're back, and you have Rich Keefe to thank. We'll get to that next.
AUDACY. Type that into your app search, then download.
More of Afternoons with Arcan and Hart on WEEI.
First career goal there for Parker Weatherspoon. It's Judd Surratt on the call. I haven't heard this song in a long time. Wow.
I was just telling our producer, Dan, what the song is really about.
Yeah, it's about a school shooter. Yeah, people, that's right. Yeah, pumped up kicks. It's the popular kids with the pumped up kicks. And this guy's going to shoot them, right?
Wait, what?
You don't know this? You don't remember this song?
No.
Pumped up kicks? This song was huge.
Yeah.
You got to outrun my gun. He says it right there in the chorus.
Faster than my bullet.
Faster than the bullet.
And they set out to make a song that if you heard on the radio, you'd be like, oh, this is a real happy song. And you'd dance and you'd sing.
Not happy.
Then you hear it from us, and it's not.
But you know what? It's a
Arcan took
song.
A happy song and made it into a school shooting. You really can't.
I didn't make it anything.
Hey, blame Foster the People.
Foster the People made it the school shooting.
I don't know who that is.
It's the guy. Well, his name's Mark Foster, but the band's called Foster the People, and this was their, I think it was their only hit, but it was a big hit. Oh, yeah, like 2012, I want to say, around then. This song was everywhere.
Now, was there, like, this their shtick? Did they have other versions of similar, where they wrote a song
where it's like a happy song about, like,
no,
right, about like a war in Israel or something? I don't think so.
It would be an interesting little niche audience thing you could do.
Yeah.
Guess the atrocity in the
like a cancer
song.
This song's really upbeat, and then you're like, "Is this about cancer?"
Oh, you know, another good song like that, like a poppy protest song, was "Zombie" by the Cranberries. That's a banger. That song.
And their bombs and their guns and their bombs.
Oh yeah,
I love that
song,
voice and those lines.
Yeah,
I put it on for my kids one day, and they're like, "I don't get it." And I'm like, "You don't think that sounds awesome the way she says that?"
Bombs on their guns, on their guns.
Because it all sounds like one word.
Rest in peace to her, by the way, because she's no longer
dead?
With us. Dead? Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. What's her name? From the Cranberries?
I don't know.
I can't remember her name. But she was awesome, and she's no longer with us. Anyways.
But Rich Keefe is still with us.
Rich Keefe,
that's
still with us, despite whoever it was that attacked his mailbox. By the way, he said he saw mail in the mailbox. Like, the mailbox got knocked over, and he went and checked it, and there was mail in it. Have we ruled out the mailman? It sounds like the behavior of the mailman stuff. He's like, and you know what, Keith? Bleep you. And then he knocks it over because he's a big Bruins fan. Could be.
It's a possibility.
Maybe
and he would know the name
right.
and the mailbox. Like,
That's so his everybody turf. Know Rich where Rich Keefe's a draft? Like, I don't think so. I have no idea.
It's an I hate Keefe, but I got to do my job kind of
right.
thing.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Oops, it's like, here's your mail. You know? Something like that. Or the thing was already knocked over and the mailman came over and did it. Or there was already mail in it and someone else knocked it over.
Someone else knocked it over.
Was it shoddily upright? Like, was it...
He said it was on the ground.
No. Like...
To begin with, Andy.
Was the post rotting? Was the post loose? Was the...
That's a good question. I couldn't tell you.
Because a snowplow snapped
when I drove by there to vandalize his mailbox, it seemed like it was fine.
Oh, so you made...
The one time I did it.
You had the first blow on it.
Oh, yeah. We all go out there every once in a while. I drive over to Keith's house.
You're a Bruins guy. You must hate him.
Yeah, totally. Hate
Rich. I don't know why people hate him. He's potentially ignited a cup run.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
I think Rich Keefe should be, they should put his name on the cup if they win it this year. I honestly think that. Like, you know, scrawl it right in there. Rich Keefe.
Couldn't have
done it without him.
Remember that Brian Cox hit against the Colts that everybody said changed the 2001 Patriots season?
Sure, yeah.
Jerome Pathon, maybe over the middle? I don't know. Somebody over the middle. This could be the Rich Keefe version. When they do they don't do DVDs anymore, but when they do the documentary,
there'll
be a huge part, a huge sit-down with Rich Keefe and the role he played in igniting them.
Yes. Now, on Rich's show with Jones, they talked about how after the game...
Is that the name of it? Rich's show with Jones.
It's not what it's called. but on Jones and Keefe, they were talking about what Marchand said after the game. And it was to the effect of, hey, great game by Swayman. Great to see Parker get his first goal. This is good. Didn't mention Pastrnak.
Didn't.
Now, I'm not going to read into that because that's beneath us here on WEEI Afternoons where I'm going to be for two more days. But I will say that you'd think after a big game like Pastrnak had last night, he was very, very good in that game. Had a couple of goals. I think had an assist. He was number two star? Yeah, and he had one goal and two assists. Excuse me. Number two star behind Jeremy Swayman, who had 43 saves and was the man last night, which we'll get to that in a second. Pastrnak, very productive, and Marchand didn't mention him. That's interesting.
And also, Pasta in a season that hasn't gone well.
Right.
Very productive. In a season that hasn't been very productive, you'd think his best buddy... Oh, you know, they stretch together, they celebrate together, they go to weddings together, parties together. He just happens to post photos on Instagram at 11 o'clock at night of all their fun things they do together. You'd think he might be ready to mention him. I'd also argue, if you were trying to sell something,
right?
You were trying to sell a narrative or counter another narrative, you might say something. And yet, nothing.
Yeah.
None.
Interesting. Marchand had a goal as well. Which was assisted by Pastrnak. And the last two goals in the third period were both empty netters, shorthanded. Andrew Peak and Pavel Zaka putting this one out of reach. It's always nice to beat the Lightning. I hate the Lightning. I hate Braden Point. I hate Vasilevsky. I hate that whole team. I've always hated them. I don't hate them like I hate the Panthers. But I do hate something about Florida hockey just pisses me off.
Did you see the seeing eye pass on the Wotherspoon goal?
Yes.
And Vasilevsky was like, no, I hit that. Like,
right.
He thought he...
That was a nice play.
Deflected that. He even looked up at like, God, what are you doing to me?
Like,
you let me down there. There's no way that should have gone through.
Yet.
That was an example of a play this team has not made very often this year.
Mm.
I think the opposite of that has happened more often than not. A guy's wide open and you miss the pass. It deflects off and... Somebody whiffed on the other end, I think, to set up that goal, actually. It was one of the rare moments where the other team had the costly, ugly turnover, and it led to a breakaway and a goal there. Are you buying this, these two games?
A little bit. They beat Florida. I have to buy that. I flipped out in the beginning of the year when they lost to Florida, so I can't be a hypocrite
now. You have to have a parade.
And then say that, well, they beat Florida, but it doesn't matter. That does matter. Beating Florida matters. And the fact that it took them a while, and I know the Panthers are a little banged up, but that was a wacky game. And they came away with the win. They did enough to win, and that matters. I'm sorry,
it does. By the skin of their teeth.
That Florida team is your boogeyman right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I thought they were going to sweep them right out of here.
Rich Keefe was their boogeyman.
Well, he is now, but it was Florida before that, and the boogeyman was winning. Let me put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
They owned you. They were in your head. They beat you early in the season in the first 2 weeks, and I flipped out about it. So if I didn't say that this was a significant win over Florida, that would make me a hypocrite. So I'm going to say, yes, it was a significant win. They followed it up with a decisive win over a good Tampa Bay team that they're neck and neck with right now. So, yeah, I think this is something. I don't know if it means they're going to launch themselves up to the top of the Atlantic, but I do think this is something, yes.
Can you bring the fight and the energy that you brought against a team that had a cheap shot cross-check in a previous game recently? Can you do that every night?
Probably not, but once you get some momentum going, I mean, you got Ottawa next. Like, there's no beef with them, I don't think. But once you get momentum going, that's a real thing in hockey.
Oh, no question.
Yeah.
And they have not had momentum all year. I even argue when they brought in Sakic and we said we kept wanting
Sacco.
There to be. I mean, Sacco.
Right.
that we wanted there to be momentum. We kind of kept trying to sell momentum that wasn't really there. This feels like it could be the start of momentum. I'm not all in because I think there's some special circumstances here. I do think Rich Keefe lit a fire on them.
Definitely.
Like, I think you can't do the things they did verbally, Instagram, the team account on Twitter, all of those things, and then pretend it didn't resonate throughout the whole team.
Yeah.
It resonated throughout the whole team. So I think he had an impact on them. Now, it's sad. It's really, really sad
that they,
they needed that and that it even happened. No disrespect to Rich Keefe, but why are they listening to him? Like why?
Why is it not even so much that they're listening? Everybody listens. But reacting like that?
Reacting. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Flipping out, calling for jobs, having a little hissy fit there for 3 minutes. I mean, that was ridiculous.
Yeah, like, Bill Belichick didn't say, don't hear the noise. He said, ignore the noise.
Yeah.
They didn't ignore Rich Keefe.
Mm-mm.
They did the, they overreacted, doth protest too much, whatever you want to call it. This is an interesting story to follow. I'm rooting for the Bruins now in a weird way. Even though I think they were jackasses to my coworker, and I'm on Team Keefe the whole way, and I don't think there's a shot in hell. All you ignorant people, oh, he made it up. He did this.
Yeah, like, right.
He didn't make anything up. Could he be wrong? Sure. Everybody's wrong.
He might have got bad info, but
bad
he's never
info.
Gotten bad info from whoever his source is ever before.
It would be bad info from a great source.
Yeah.
And you guys overreact to that, but I'm actually rooting for the story because I want the Rich Keefe victory lap. And that's a weird world for Marchand. It's like, if we keep winning, that guy's going to think we're winning because of him.
Right.
But we kind of need to keep winning or we won't be a playoff
team. Throw a bunch of games and they're like, yeah, nah, kid, it was
I'll show ball. Him. And then they're going to trade Marchand because they're out of the playoffs and they're blowing the whole damn thing up.
Right.
So, yeah, Rich Keefe's spending a lot of time in their brains right now.
Yeah, and it's working, so good. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Mike Vrabel spoke with Tommy Curran on his podcast yesterday. It was a stand-up interview down there at Gillette. Had some interesting things to say. We'll get to that. We have What If Wednesday coming up and a funny story for odds and ends at the end of the show. That's all coming up in the final hour, which begins right after this.